Let me tell you about my friends over at Citrus America and their amazing juicing equipment. They're revolutionizing the way you enjoy freshly squeezed juice. They're at the best hotels, restaurants, and markets. Their mission is simple. Develop a unique consumer experience with on-premise juicing, deliver healthy taste options to clientele, and juice more faster. It's that easy. Citrus America supplies the highest quality juicing equipment and solutions in the industry. So whether you're a small business owner or a large corporation, Citrus America has the right juicing equipment for you. Find out more at citrusamerica.com.
You've just stepped inside the Walk and Talk podcast, number one in the nation for food lovers, chefs, and storytellers. I'm Carl Fiadini, your host, shining a light on the flavor, the hustle, and the heart of the industry. We're the official podcast for the New York, California, and Florida restaurant shows, the Pizza Tomorrow Summit, the U.S. Culinary Open at NAFM, and the North American media platform for the Burnt Chef Project. Recorded at Ibis Images Studios, where food photography comes alive, and I get the first bite. Find out more info at thewalkandtalk.com. Today we're sitting down with Chef Andy Nasser of Keel & Curley. Part chef, part builder, all heart. He's the kind of chef who plates a dish the same way he frames a photo. All about angles, light, and balance. From a food truck kitchen to a full winery restaurant, Andy's turning a Florida farm into a place where food and wine sing together. Walk and Talk Media was on the floor at the California Restaurant Show where we caught up with Kelsey Fagan from Terrace Leap, a company that's redefining what restaurant menus can be. Their menus are waterproof, tearproof, and sustainably made from a single polyester-based material that never cracks, frays, or peels. Each one is printed in a wind-powered facility and built to last for years. Innovation that keeps your menus looking as sharp as your service. We'll share a clip from that conversation later in the episode. Back here in Florida, Chef Andy's story is all about passion over pretension. He's mentoring young cooks through a shifting industry, balancing high-volume simplicity with real creativity and keeping the soul of cooking alive. His philosophy is raw, reflective, and rooted in love for the craft. Let's get into how we built it and what comes next. Chef, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Let me tell you something. I'm happy. I'm super happy. And that's because I got fed well today. You did phenomenal.
Thank you.
Heard that. How was it for you today?
No, it was fun. I don't do a lot of this type of stuff. So it was nice to get out of the kitchen and do some fun things and stuff that I wouldn't normally do every single day. And then also just hanging out with you guys, talking about stuff that you guys can relate to because you guys have been in the industry as well.
Isn't it interesting to be doing industry stuff, but surrounded by lights, cameras, microphones, all the action?
No, it's definitely different. And it's fun because, you know, the conversations that we're having earlier of like, hey, slow it down a little bit. I'm like, well, you gotta hurry up. The ticket times are running late. Like, you know, my mindset is not filming as much as you guys are. So I'm trying to adjust a little bit to that and then also, you know, play ball and make sure that I'm not ruining the shot because I'm just too worried about doing things too fast.
I'll give you props. For your first time doing this, you did terrific.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. And the food was phenomenal. Like, I was really, so I'm gonna say my favorite dish was definitely the pork, but I didn't think it was going to be because I was so happy with the shrimp dish.
Awesome. Yeah. The pork dish you're talking about is we did a little bibimbap and I try to put a little bit of a Plant City spin on it. So, you know, some of the fermentation or the sauce work on it was going to be a little bit more barbecue, you know, as leaning. And then, I think it turned out pretty well. And yeah, a little bit of blend from the Asian and the Southern all mixed into one.
For those that don't know what a bibimbap is, why don't you go ahead and
Yeah. So it's not just a funny word. It's a Korean dish that typically gets served in like a little hot pot where the rice kind of gets crispy on the bottom and then you kind of build it on top. So it's a lot of accoutrements of sesame, vegetables, pickled vegetables, you know, fermented kimchi, you know, pork, beef, whatever kind of, what kind of you want to deal with it. And then obviously usually topped off with an egg and some sauce work.
I'm all about barbecue. And I want you to talk about
the simple barbecue sauce you made, and then get into that dish now too with the pork.
Yeah, so the barbecue sauce that we put on the bibimbap today was going to be a gochugang barbecue sauce. It's super simple. I got some gochugang sauce, some rice wine vinegar, a little bit of extra heat, and then just a store-bought. I think we use Sweet Baby Ray's around my house, so that's what I had, and we kind of blended together. You get a little bit of the sweet heat, and you still get that Korean fermentation a little bit along with it.
The whole thing was amazing. Dish two.
Dish two was going to be a moqueca. It was going to be a moqueca. My buddy, who I've worked alongside for many years, is Brazilian. So there's a lot of times in my life working side by side with him where I would come to work and either ask questions or, you know, hey, what did your mom do? What did your grandma do back when you used to live in Brazil? And then I would come into the work the next day and kind of execute that dish and kind of give him something fun to eat that reminds him of home, but also like challenges myself a little bit of now I can do something different that I've never done before.
You've said you didn't grow up struggling. So with that being said, what did fuel you? What gave you that spark to get into cooking?
In general, like I just think having the spark is just something natural that comes to me. I think everybody in my family is very hardworking. I think my father kind of instilled that into all of us, where if we're going to do something, we got to do it right. We're going to do it well. And you put all your effort into it and you're just not mailing it in. So I think that's a good quality to have when it comes to cooking. And then I just feel like most of my life, I was always kind of, you know, providing a little bit for myself, whether my parents are at work or they're doing something else across the house. I was always cooking for myself, lunch and dinner wise. So I think it just kind of translated into, well, if I'm going to do it for myself, I might as well learn how to do it well.
You are not the norm. Typically, people get into this business because that's the only thing available. And then from that initial entry point, the passion kind of comes into play. But with you, you have an obsession switch and you can't turn it off.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I will go home and watch, you know, Netflix series on cooking, or I'll go on YouTube and spend hours just watching other people cook, whether it's, you know, a food podcaster, blogger, you know, with Maddie Matheson or Binging with Babish, like the famous guys, or it could just be like, you know, somebody's aunt at home that's got 10 views on their video. Like I'm looking at everything and trying to learn as much as I can, because to me, learning is fun. I never really found that interest in school when I was in high school or middle school, but it started sparking on me when I went to culinary school of, hey, there's a lot of stuff I don't know and I would like to. And I think that's kind of where ever since then, my life has just translated me to learning more and trying to be better at what I'm doing.
Yeah, but what keeps that fire going for you?
Just natural competitiveness, I guess. I've always played sports and I like to be good at what I do. If I'm going to do something, I want to be the best. And then, you know, in terms of a career, I want to be successful in my career so my family and my kids have a better opportunity.
But who are you competing with?
Myself. I'm not worried about anybody else.
So when I have 25 years in food service sales, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've always, and I don't know if this was right or wrong or whatever, but I always had a secret person or company that I would secretly target. And it was my motivation. I wouldn't tell a soul. Nobody knew about that person, the company, whatever. It was only for me. And that was my propulsion, part of my propulsion. Because I love the industry and I like working with chefs and I love going to new establishments and, you know, all of that. But in order to stay motivated in a sales capacity, I needed to find somebody to target. You don't have that at all?
No, I understand what you're saying. I definitely get that. It's kind of like the rival, you know, the rivalry aspect of you wanna have somebody that's challenging and pushing you to so you can keep up with. I've always kind of felt like I was, you know, whether it's because of the location that I've been at cooking, you know, that there's not really anyone specifically that I feel like is a rival with me, because it's kind of, I've been on an island. Well, you know, I've got some friends in the business that I always try to be as good, if not better than them, but I don't necessarily consider it a rivalry, and more of like, there's a lot of times where we'll bounce off ideas of each other and it's like, hey, this would be really cool. Or, you know, he's my buddy, Randy, who owns a food truck and he'll send me his menu before he executes it. And he's like, look at this cool thing. It's not like, hey, I want to be better than him, but it's like, we have an appreciation for each other and we understand because we're in the same line of work. But I feel like I don't need another person. I understand why that would be a scenario in some people. I just feel like I've got enough personalities of myself to compete with.
Great presentable menus bring in amazing 5-star reviews. You know what's so amazing about our product is that, unlike lamination, our product is made from one material. So it's a polyester-based paper, so it will never crack, fray, or peel. Of course, it's waterproof, rip-proof, all of those incredible things, so that your menu will last a lifetime. I feel that TerraSlate menus really enhance the experience for the diner. It makes you feel like you're in an elevated space when the menu just looks amazing. It feels amazing. We are 100% sustainably made. So our factory is powered by wind. Our product itself is a polyester base, so it breaks down. It is recyclable. Our product is 100% customizable. We have multiple different weights and mills for you. I see our design team do amazing work every single day, and that is their favorite part of their jobs, is collaborating with the restaurants, with those chefs. What is your vision? We want to bring your menu's vision to life. Our product is so durable. The coloring will not fade. It will not crack. It will not peel. Put it to the test and it'll come back looking good as new.
You tell your cooks to chase fulfillment, even if it's not working for you. At what moment did you realize that leadership meant just letting go?
I mean, I think that's a very common saying, is if you love something, you have to be able to let it go as well. I think that, in the line of work that I'm in, whether someone is, changing their career path, or maybe this isn't their career and it's kind of just a stepping stone in their life, I need to be able to support them in whatever they choose to, whether they want to go be a tattoo artist, which is, it kind of hits home here. Or somewhere artwork, or there's a lot of venues that these guys and girls that work for me want to explore, and those aren't things that I necessarily can offer. I don't have any ties to that line of work, but I want them to be happy. And I think ultimately, even if they want to stay in a kitchen, if they're not happy in the kitchen that we have, I don't want them to be there. And it's not like a spiteful way of me saying like, hey, if you're not happy, get out of here. It's a, hey, I want you to feel happy to go to work every day, because ultimately, like, you've been in the business long enough to know, like, if you're doing the same thing over and over again and you don't like it, it's only going to cause issues internally for yourself. You're not going to produce the best work that you can do. And then also, like, it's not something you want to take home with you as well. Like, you need to be happy when you go to work. You get the best work when you're happy.
You'd mentioned that one of the cooks actually wants to get into, tattooing, or he's into it now and he wants to kind of, continue with it. If it's me, I'm setting up shop in the restaurant. I mean, you probably get like half of your business right through the back door.
Yeah, I'm not sure the health department's super fond on blood, needles, and food.
Do it right on the line, right on the pass, yeah. Right there. We just, we set it right up. No?
No, we've done some events where we try to get some tattooers out, and there's a lot of red tape when it comes to that kind of stuff in the kitchens.
When we first started Walk and Talk Media, this is before like TikTok and Reels and, 7-second memory swiping, death scroll. We actually had a show, and it was about a 30-minute show. And one of the segments was called Kitchen Inc. I saw an opportunity for chefs to tell their stories through what they have on their body. I don't have any tattoos, but I respect the art of it. And I just think it's pretty cool. Either way.
No, I think the tattoo industry, the music industry, and then the service industry, I would say specifically kitchen part of the service industry, are all very similar in the people that they attract. And, you've got the outcast or the people who don't want to wake up early, or, it seems like they have the same group of people that hang out in those three professions, and they're very similar, whether there's some crossover or not, or, But it is kind of cool to see that. And I've got some tattoos and I love tattoos. We just hopefully can get some more with coming up.
Imagine this lineup: a barber, a chef, and a tattoo artist. You don't know who's who. You wouldn't be able to say, "Well, that's the chef, that's the barber, and that's the tattoo artist." Everybody looks the same,
and they all have aprons on, and you know, tattoos everywhere. So there's no distinguishing.
You never know. I don't know who's cooking my omelet tomorrow morning, but you know, it's gonna, you know, I'm gonna have a sweet fade too. What can I tell you?
And there's probably some lineups that, you know, the barber is going to work in a kitchen at the end of the day. Like, it's just crossing over.
So building a kitchen from a food truck, from a truck, what's something that you've learned working in these tight quarters that kind of shaped how you'll run your new kitchen at Kiel?
Yeah. So, you know, the kitchen that we have right now, it's very tight and it's small, you know, small and hot, and we produce so much out of what we have. So it's incredible. And I try to remind the staff, like, this is not, you know, some of them that haven't worked in other kitchens, this is their first one. I try to remind them, like, hey, what you guys are doing is amazing, because, you know, Carrabba's will run, you know, it's local and it's Pio's kind of, so they run twice as many staff and their kitchen is twice as big and they're doing less numbers than us. So it's like, hey man, we're knocking stuff out with less. You know, we're in the process of building the kitchen, and you know, obviously there's some, you know, delays with the county and the state, you know, all the building and all that stuff that's way above my pay grade. But I think that the fact that we are able to do this out of the kitchen that we have now will only make the next kitchen better, because they already can handle it. So now we're giving them more tools to execute different items and better items, in my opinion, and they're not going to feel the stress of it because they've got more things to help them with. You know, we can only fit 7 in our kitchen comfortably. You know, if I have a kitchen that can fit 10, that's way less work and way more time that people can actually spend on their dishes to make them really, really, really popping.
Were you at Kiel when the small truck was there?
No, that was Kenny's truck. Kenny still works there. He's one of my older guys, and he's a prep guy. He's part-time now, but he was a chef when the old truck. So I've heard some horror stories, and you know, I give Kenny a lot of props of, you know, making things work when sometimes it was not easy.
So as you're expanding Kiel into this new frontier of food, how do you create dishes that complement wine and still work for a team of 19-year-olds? It's a high volume. You guys are doing a lot of volume. Mm. You're busy. You got kids in there. I mean, that's the nature of the industry.
Yeah.
How are you dealing with that?
I think just the mentorship of it, where, you know, I can explain, they can obviously eat the food that we're producing, and they can see, you know, what's going with what. You know, obviously they can't drink the wine because they're not 21. Some of them aren't, some of them are. But I think that having the literature available to them, which, you know, we've got excellent front of house employees, and Andrew, our president of operations up front, is amazing with explaining things to, you know, to even me, where I don't drink a whole lot. So sometimes he might have to fill me in on some things. And I think that's how you make it a very successful kitchen, by giving them the opportunity to learn these things and then implement it when it comes down to it. I think the just having the knowledge and giving it to them, making sure that if they have questions, we have got answers.
Clay and Carmen have done what a job on that place. I mean, it was always cool, but now it's like the place to be. It's a completely different vibe and feel. And I don't think that there's... I don't even think that the ceiling is even close to being scratched yet. Like, there's still so much more room to grow, Kiel.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Clay and Carmen do a great job, and they're always close by if we need them. You know, Wendy is our COO as well, and they do a great job of keeping me on my toes and keeping me busy, whether we have a private dinner or, you know, we have harvest days every single weekend in October, where they're, you know, at one point when the Rays were in the playoffs, I was using this as an example of, hey, we had more people on our property than the Rays at their baseball game. You know, then maybe, I don't know if that's a very high bar to set. You know, I love the Rays myself, but, you know, I think we had over 5,000, 6,000 people on one weekend, and that just says a lot about of what we're doing, whether, you know, we're not just a restaurant, we're not just a winery, we're a place to bring your family and enjoy yourself.
I mean, listen, you're hitting more home runs than they are. That's all I'm saying.
Well, yeah, currently where they're out. So, you know, there's always next year.
Do you know what I'm saying? And by the way, Wendy is, that's my girl. She is phenomenal. And like the workload and the things that she's like, she's accomplished a lot over there too. Hats off to Wendy. She's terrific.
Yeah, no, I think I think everybody that we have is in the right position to where they need to be for us to all be successful. I think I heard that there was a Scorsese quote, not that I'm a huge Scorsese fan, but, you know, they're asking him like, you know, questions about how he does his movies. And I hire the right people for the right job. He's like, I can do lights, but I'm not the best person at lights. So I'm going to hire the best person at lights and I'm going to do my job the best of my abilities. And I feel like that's a very similar thing in the restaurant industry where like, you know, I'm okay. I love being in the front of house. Just, you know, I love being in the kitchen, but I love being in the front of house too, you know, to talk to guests. Am I the best? No, we have the best in the front. And that's why I'm in the back, because I'm the best in the back. And, you know, we have everybody in the position that they need to be to win. You don't put your quarterback on defense because you need him throwing the ball.
You've talked about pretentiousness and trend inflation. What's the line between pushing creativity and losing authenticity?
Yeah, I think that there's like an overcorrection and in terms of pretentiousness where people kind of stick their nose up at things. You know, we're talking earlier about like, I love Taco Bell. Like, you know, if I go to some of these, you know, big time chefs or, you know, the ones that are serving nice Michelin star meals, like I would assume that they're not going to Taco Bell as often as I am, but, you know, I don't know.
They are probably as bad or worse as where we are in our levels.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the pressure. So like I can appreciate this and I can totally add to this. I was a high performing salesperson and sales management, right? In sales management. And the more pressure and the more growth that you're looking for, and the more people that you employ, and the more bars and goals that are there, the more stress there is. I'm a stress eater. So for me, I'm driving around. It's easy for me to hit a drive-thru. I'm going to eat it right there in the parking lot. And I'm going to stuff myself. And I've done this forever. I think I have a hold of it now. I think I've gotten control of that. But, you know, I get it. Like, I understand. And there's nothing sweeter than hitting a drive-thru. It's so satisfying. I know it's garbage food. I know that there's chemicals. I know all of that.
But why? But that kind of hits on my point. Why is it garbage food? Just in the sense of healthiness as you're referring to? Or
when business decided to put all efforts into having shelf life on product, that's when all of the chemicals started getting put into what we eat. Obviously, when you're talking about scaling, and you're talking about, let's say, you know, the Golden Arches, right? How many thousands of restaurants are there, right? Their locations are everywhere, all over the world. You have to have consistency, and you need to be, and it needs to be done in a way where it's so scalable. That means they figured out ways to extend for the shelf life for these products. And, you know, that goes into grocery stores and alike, all of it. So for me, I get it. I understand profitability. I understand scaling. I understand all of that. Is it bad? I don't know. I've been eating this stuff since at least 15 on my own, you know, after I got my first job. Before that, I never ate, hardly ever had fast food. It was always home-cooked meals. You know, I was very blessed with my family and the cooking. But I transitioned into fast food at 15 years old. And I never look back. So we'll see. I'm 51. If I can get to 80, then you know what? Maybe it wasn't so bad after all.
I mean, I think it's not healthy for you. But I never classify anything that I eat or ingest as garbage food because, like, to me, I really like it. Like, it's not garbage to me. Like, it's delicious. And I think that's where, like, maybe the terminology, I think, is different between the two of us where, you know, maybe that's why I say pretentiousness. Like, if it's good, it doesn't matter to me if it's cheap or if a kid made it or an adult, like it's across the line. It's just, that's my standard.
Don't get me twisted.
Mm-hmm.
I love eating the food because it tastes good.
Mm.
And people who say that it doesn't, they don't know what they're talking about. And that's the truth. The problem is what's in it.
Yeah.
That's when I say garbage, not flavor profiles or if it's satisfying or whatever. No, it's just not healthy. And I know that if I were to, you know, there was a time when I would eat four times a week, you know, a lot each day.
Right.
I saw in real time, fast time, how much weight you can put on by doing that.
Mm.
It's simply not healthy, but that's not the point. It's delicious. And it used to be inexpensive. Now, I mean, you're spending $15 or $20 for a stupid little thing and you don't even get full on.
Yeah, no, that's where does fully circle back to the original question is, you know, pretentiousness in the food or the profitability. Like to me, it is whether it's expensive food or cheap food, if it's good and it makes me happy, that's kind of where I hold my bar and my standard. You know, if food makes me happy, and to what you said, the stress eating, like there's a reason why people do stress eat. It's because that is a comfort. You know, that's why the term comfort food is around. And food is something that provides one, you know, nutrition or substance, but also like emotional. Unfortunately, it's emotionally supportive sometimes where you can have, you know, food that reminds you of your childhood and that makes you feel better. Or, you know, if your mom passed away and you are eating black beans and rice or whatever, you know, that reminds you of her, and that's going to give you nourishment, not just for your body, but for like your soul.
That's a major truth bomb. How do you catch yourself from getting too comfortable? You've mentioned that complacency kills creativity.
I try not to, you know, I usually set like standards and timelines on places that I want to be at, whether it's like physically at, or, you know, if I'm staying at one spot and doing the same thing over and over and over again, it's either got to get better or change, or whether we're changing the menu or we're creating a whole different style or an idea. It's something, it just has to change so we are not doing the same thing over and over again. Once I feel like I'm doing the same thing over and over again, it's not bringing me joy, then I know I can't be bringing joy to other people through my food because I'm not experiencing that. And I think ultimately, like selfishly, everything is revolving around me when it comes to my cooking. So if I don't have that, you know, quote unquote love in my dish, I don't really feel like the customer is going to get it. And if I'm not providing love through the food, then they might as well go to the Taco Bells and the McDonald's. Like that's, you know, it's good food and there's no love in it. It's just getting what you get. Like I need to provide something more than just, you know, meat and bread or, you know, whatever dish I'm doing has got to be inspired. Otherwise, I don't want to be doing what I'm doing because I'm not happy. And I feel like we haven't gotten to that point where I'm not happy, but like, I want to make sure that I still stay on par with just growing and learning and then doing cool stuff. And that's the cool thing about my profession is there's so much opportunity to keep learning and doing cool things that I don't see it ever running out anytime soon.
One of the biggest killers is when leadership loses their vision, loses their momentum, loses their drive, because that trickles down to the rest of the team, to its, you know, smallest denominator.
No, that's 1,000%, you know, the standard that I try to, you know, show my staff is, you know, I'm here, you know, on the busiest days of the week where we're getting our, you know, butt kicked in, or, you know, we have so many tickets on our screen. Like I am in the middle. I am directing the team. Like I am here in the trenches with you because I have to set that example of like, hey, I'm here with you guys, making sure that you're good. Because I know if I have your back, you're going to have my back. And I really, really feel that mentality has to be shared amongst every restaurant. You know, I don't want to be a chef that's walking around my clipboard taking orders and, you know, barking orders and pointing and people doing stuff. Like I'm chopping onions. I'm, you know, dropping the fryer or boiling it out. Like at no point in my career, whether I was just starting out to where I'm at right now, like I was the lowest and I'm the highest right now. Like, I'm still dropping fryers and I'm still boiling them out or doing the flat top if I need to. Like there's no, you can't be above anything, because then once other people think you're above something, they're not going to respect you enough. to where they're going to give you what they need to give you.
Puerto Rican and Lebanese roots. Do you see these flavors sneaking into your menu subconsciously, or do you kind of keep them separate by design?
I don't think they sneak in, but I don't think I'm like purposely not doing it. I just don't. Those are things that I would like to explore. I've done Cuban food. I worked at a Cuban sandwich shop, and we did a lot of Cuban-inspired food. And just being a chef in Florida in general, I have a decent background in that style of food. But I like to explore different things where I don't know. You know, I'm really super. If you ask anybody, I'm super into Asian and Mexican cuisine, and that's kind of like my wheelhouse. Doesn't mean I don't like cooking some African food every now and then, or figuring out, you know, why do, you know, the Europeans do things this way, the French cooking. Like I've got a lot of tools across the board. I don't think I'm a master of any cuisine per se. Like I wouldn't say like Andy is a blah chef, but I just want to be good at everything, so I have versatility. And I don't know enough about Lebanese cuisine. You know, my father never really cooked too many Lebanese dishes because he didn't know enough about it either. So like, it's not like I could say, hey, you know, my heritage, I'm the expert at it. Like, I don't, there's a lot of things about my heritage I don't know, and that's fine. But I'm also super quick to admit, like, I would love to learn more, and that eventually will happen.
I need to connect you with Rona Bashour. She's a baker, and she's actually Lebanese Puerto Rican as well.
Seems like that's a popular blend, and I don't know why. Like, I know a lot of Lebanese people that are married to Puerto Rican people.
Strangely, I'd never heard that before in my life until coming to Tampa.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure, but I do see it a lot. I feel like
Rona's awesome. Sweetest woman on the planet. Rona's Cookies and More is her company, and she's a baker. She does a terrific job. Kiel isn't going anywhere anytime soon. It's a staple now in our area here. In the spirit of mentorship and longevity, what do you want your cooks to take away from your kitchen besides technique? I mean, there's life lessons and there's all sorts of things. And when you're at a place like Kiel that is having this, you know, larger appeal now, it's getting outside of, you know, Plant City, that it's getting outside of their territory. What life lessons do you want these kids to leave with?
I think we kind of touched on it a little bit before is, you know, we want to make sure that our guys are happy and they're doing what they love, whether it's with us or not. But I also want to explain to them, you know, the importance of working hard and making the extra effort, because across the board, whether you're cooking or you're, you know, taking the trash out, or there's so many professions that are, every profession is, if you, the harder you work, the better you're going to get. And the more willing you are to make yourself uncomfortable and do the things that nobody else wants to do, that's going to give you a giant leg up on other people. And I feel like that's how I've gotten. It's just, you know, I don't typically turn things down, and I just want to do everything I can to get the job done. And I think that sometimes people, you know, laziness can set in, or, you know, complacency. You know, you got to make sure that everybody at all times is always giving 110%. And it's kind of cliche, but it is the truth. The harder you work, the more it's going to benefit you.
When the new kitchen opens, what's the dish that's going to define the next chapter for you? There's got to be one that says, hey, this is who we are now.
No, the terminology that I've been throwing around is elevated redneck. You know, I want to have these country roots of, you know, something that the local demographic of our Plant City in Dover and Sefner, you know, that demographic is going to be different than the St. Pete and Clearwater and even Orlando crew. Like there's different, you know, it doesn't make them badder. It's just different. And, you know, these guys love home cooking, and, you know, one of the staples in Plant City is like Fred's, like that. It's very successful because they do what they do and they do it well. The barbecue and the mac and cheeses and the collard greens and those things are great. I eat them all the time. But how do I turn those familiar ideas into something that excites me? And, you know, like we did a dish today, whether you did a country bibimbap, like there's going to be a heavier influence of barbecue and smoked meats moving forward, hopefully.
That, first of all, that dish should be on the menu. Kiel, Clay, Wendy, everybody, if you're listening to this, put that dish on the menu. Change the name, but put the dish on the menu. I mean, you're talking about eggs, mushrooms, you're talking about barbecue, pork. It's fantastic. By God, it was fantastic.
Thank you.
All right, Chef, this was your first time doing media. Did you think the vibe here was pretentious? Do you think it was laid back? Talk a little bit about your day today.
No, it was definitely not neither of those things. I don't think that you guys would be doing a good job if it was. I think you make people feel comfortable, and I certainly felt comfortable as soon as I came in. Obviously, you know, speaking and you know, almost having somewhat of a speech at certain points, like, you know, I'm gonna fumble over my words, or, you know, have anxiety, and I think those are things that just come with practice, and eventually, hopefully, I'll get better at them. But, you know, ultimately, I think it was a super fun experience, and we did some fun things. And obviously, the pictures and the videos are, you know, from what I've seen, look amazing. So I'm super excited about that, because that's just cool stuff that I can post and share with my friends and family.
Isn't media needed now for the food industry?
Oh, it's absolutely. If you don't, then, like, if you don't have an Instagram or a Facebook, or, you know, even I don't have TikTok. I kind of look down on TikTok myself, but I understand the value in it. Those things are just, you know, you have to have them, you know, because, you know, I don't know how old your kids are, younger, but, like, you know, if I say 6, 7, like, you know, that's going to drive the kids crazy. And I'm sure, like, the restaurant industry has to lean into these fads and the trends, because that's what's going to attract the people to come in.
But is this a fad or a trend? I think cameras and video.
Well, no. But using the fads and the trend through the media, you know, the media's kind of always been there, but not utilized as much as it should. That's why, you know, when the last time you worked in a restaurant, like, did you have a salary social media, like, manager? Like,
dude, the last time I worked in a restaurant, I mean, there were. I don't even know what to.
Was there social media?
There wasn't even MySpace.
Yeah.
Nothing existed. There was no proof of anything. Like, even, like, you were lucky if your restaurant had cameras outside. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it didn't exist.
Yeah, your Google reviews were just on pieces of paper and turning them in. And
there was no Google.
Yeah. Well, that's what I mean. Like, there's no way to get the feedback, but I think that's
Wait a minute. Just to put this in perspective, right? And a lot of things don't change. Like, the technology changes and the trends might change a little bit. But the industry itself, the mechanics of it, doesn't change. We didn't have the internet. It was hardly there. Okay? So it was newspapers. It was TV. And that's really what you had. Radio, obviously. But that's it. Like, there was no, like, oh, I'm going to... directions, a map, or something like that. No, it was like paper maps, man.
But to your point, that is media as well. It's just different.
Yeah, but it isn't today's media. Everything is predicated on, I do this myself. If I look up a company and there's no Instagram, I'm not interested anymore. What are you hiding? Or you're not there yet, or you're not good. You're fake or whatever. You have to have a presence. I don't even care about your website anymore. It doesn't even matter. What are your socials? Let me see. I want to get into it. I want to see what it is. I want to get there quick. Let me see, digest, and make decisions. That's what it is. And then I'm going to go see if Amazon has it. I don't know. That's just the way. That's the way it works, man. You know what I mean? No. Not food. I'm just saying in general. Like,
but no. To your point, I think that is 1,000% true. The operations are still this. You still have to have good service. You still have to have a good product. You still have to have, you know, employees that the customers are going to want to come in and see. You know, we've got some regulars that come in at certain days because they want to see that server, or they want to have this certain thing on a Tuesday because they always do. Like, that's not going to change. What's going to change is how do we get the new people, you know, the younger crowd, you know, the people that, you know, we're a winery, so, you know, alcohol is a big part of our business. So how do we get the 19-year-old in 2 years when they start drinking legally? You know, then, you know, we have our customer base is the 40 to 60, like, they're never going to stop coming. I don't believe so, at least. But how do we get the people that are coming up? And that's going to be through the TikTok and the Instagram and all that crazy stuff.
There's one thing in today's food industry that I absolutely cannot, I don't know how it exists. For the entire history of food, and gratuity, well, the server would drop a check and walk away and leave. And then you figure out what you're going to leave under no pressure or anything. And, you know, I mean, if you're not a cheapo, you leave a good tip, right? Or if the server was at least decent, you leave a good, you know, good tip. This whole thing with they come over with the device and they stand over you, you know, when they drop the check and the device and they're waiting for you as you get to pick, you know, 15, 18, 20, whatever. It's like, get the hell out of here. Don't stand over my shoulder. Don't stand at this table. Who taught you how to do this? I don't know where that comes from. But when I was coming up, you were the rest of the restaurant would ostracize you if you did that. Not to mention the customer, the guest would tell you to get the hell out of here.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, like I think that the QR menus and the we use Toast, the tablets, and hey, let me turn this around. It's going to ask you a couple questions. I know what it's going to ask me, but like it's how do we as people in charge of the restaurant, you know, that's a good challenge for myself and Andrew and anybody else that's talking to our staff. How do we implement these new devices and these new things that are they're inevitable? They're going to happen, but how do we utilize them to the point where they don't feel like they're being pressured and they don't feel uncomfortable? And you know, there's certain ways to do things the correct way, and that will make, you know, so the older generation is not super feel uncomfortable. Where, you know, I didn't mean to call you the older generation, but you know the tablet in your face, it's going to happen. So how do you make it work where the people don't feel uncomfortable about it?
Put it down and walk away.
No, yeah.
That's it. Like,
but that's all part of training.
My standard fare gratuity is 20%. Like my baseline is 20%. And then it'll go up from there because, you know, you're good or not, you know, whatever. And I still don't even go lower than that typically ever, even if the service wasn't up to standard. You know, I just, okay, you get 20%. But when somebody stands in front of me, and I don't do it, but I want to, because I'm not cheap.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do the lowest or other and give them like and I'm going to say next time walk away, you get more. I've never done that, but to truth be told, that's in my heart.
I think you could do that if you're respectful enough about it. Like, hey, like,
but I'm not a douchebag.
Like, but I don't think that is that.
I think it is. I put myself in their shoes and, you know, and unless you have if you get a server multiple times, and they're just not good. Okay, it's a different story. And me, just because of who I am and where I've come from, I'd pull the jam aside. I'd be like, hey, you know, look at this. But any other time, I give people the benefit of the doubt. Because you know what? I have bad days all the time. And I don't want somebody to, you know, if I do something dumb or have an attitude and I don't mean to, and I want somebody to judge me forever on that little happenstance. So I give everybody the benefit of the doubt. But damn, put down the tablet and walk away. If you're a server and you're listening to this, for all things holy, put it down and walk away.
I'll have to relay that conversation to my staff and make sure that
next staff meeting, drop it like a bomb.
Yeah, I mean my thing is making sure that we're feeling comfortable and the guests are comfortable. And I think at the end of the day, like, that's what's going to cause the most success, and that's what we're after.
Chef, my main man Andy, dude, you did great today. By the way, I just wanted you to know that you did fantastic.
I appreciate it.
I actually can't wait to start doing the video on this. It's gonna be dope. How do we find you? What's the social?
So you can look us up at Keel Farms FL on Instagram, Keel Farms on Facebook, and I'm Keel Farms, I believe, is on TikTok as well. We're everywhere. Check us out. We're a great place. We do much more than just wine and food. We're an event place.
Yeah, and by the way, we did. We were picked up by the Central Florida Film Festival for our Gulf Shrimp Tagliatelle documentary, and part of that was shot at Keel for the blueberry segment. So, hats off to all of us for that. It's pretty dope, John. As always, you're kind of a dork. I know, but I love you, man. I'm only kidding. All right. We are out. Chefs and food buyers,
let me tell you about a product that will generate new excitement on your menu. Fully cooked, pasture-raised, all-natural Australian lamb from Aussie Select. Their award-winning, handcrafted, innovative products are blended with the finest spices and amazing flavors. Options include agave rosemary, tikka masala, lamb pastrami, and lamb prime rib roast. Available sliced or whole with a long shelf life too. Find out more at AussieSelect.com. Elevate your dining experience with Rack Porcelain USA. As the exclusive tableware brand for the Walk and Talk podcast, Rack combines exceptional craftsmanship with innovative design. Whether you're a chef, a restaurant owner, or a food enthusiast, Rack's high-quality porcelain products will enhance every meal. Discover the artistry of food presentation and make every dining occasion special. Visit RackPorcelain.com today and see how Rack can transform your table.